Never mind about that, Duncan said. What we need is a plan. Now, we need to prove to Nero that Coach Genghis is really Count Olaf. How can we do that? Nero has that computer, Violet said thoughtfully. He showed us a little picture of Olaf on the screen, remember? Yes, Klaus said, shaking his head. He told us that the advanced computer system would keep Olaf away. So much for computers. Sunny nodded her head in agreement, and Violet picked her up and put her on her lap. Nero had reached a particularly shrieky section of his sonata, and the children had to lean forward to one another in order to continue their conversation. If we go and see Nero first thing tomorrow morning, Violet said, we can talk to him alone, without Olaf butting in. We'll ask him to use the computer. Nero might not believe us, but the computer should be able to convince him to at least investigate Coach Genghis. Maybe Nero will make him take off the turban, Isadora said, revealing Olaf's only eyebrow. Or take off those expensive-looking running shoes, Klaus said, revealing Olaf's tattoo. But if you talk to Nero, Duncan said, then Coach Genghis will know that you're suspicious. That's why we'll have to be extra careful, Violet said. We want Nero to find out about Olaf without Olaf finding out about us. And in the meantime, Duncan said, Isadora and I will do some investigating ourselves. Perhaps we can spot one of these assistants you've described. That would be very useful, Violet said, if you're sure about wanting to help us. Say no more about it, Duncan said, and patted Violet's hand. And they said no more about it. They didn't say another word about Count Olaf for the rest of Nero's sonata, or while he performed it the second time, or the third time, or the fourth time, or the fifth time, or even the sixth time, by which time it was very, very late at night. The Baudelaire orphans and the Quagmire triplets merely sat in a companionable comfort, a phrase which here means many things, all of them happy, even though it is quite difficult to be happy, while hearing a terrible sonata performed over and over by a man who cannot play the violin, while attending an atrocious boarding school when an evil man is sitting nearby, undoubtedly planning something dreadful. But happy moments came rarely and unexpectedly in the Baudelaire's lives, and the three siblings had learned to accept them. Duncan kept his hand on Violet's and talked to her about terrible concerts he had attended back when the Quagmire parents were alive, and she was happy to hear his stories. Isadora began working on a poem about libraries and showed Klaus what she had written in her notebook, and Klaus was happy to offer suggestions. And Sunny snuggled down in Violet's lap and chewed on the armrest of her seat, happy to bite something that was so sturdy. I'm sure you would know, even if I didn't tell you, that things were about to get much worse for the Baudelaires. But I will end this chapter with this moment of companionable comfort, rather than skip ahead to the unpleasant events of the next morning, or the terrible trials of the days that followed, or the horrific crime that marked the end of the Baudelaires' time at Prufrock Prep. These things happened, of course, and there is no use pretending they didn't. But for now, let us ignore the terrible sonata, the dreadful teachers, the nasty, teasing students, and the even more wretched things that will be happening soon enough. Let us enjoy this brief moment of comfort, as the Baudelaires enjoyed it in the company of the Quagmire triplets, and, in Sunny's case, an armrest. Let us enjoy, at the end of this chapter, the last happy moment any of these children would have for a long, long time.